Fast Forward is a series from Tomorrow Unlocked by Kaspersky, because your digital life deserves complete protection. However rapidly tech is changing our world and connections, your family's digital life matters. Protect it with the new Kaspersky. Search Kaspersky on your smart speakers or check the show notes to start your free 30-day trial. Fast Forward is written and presented by Ghislaine Boddington. Episode 3, Telegram to Telepresence. Is the family being swept away on a digital tidal wave?
There is a future that we think we know already, one that seems as safe as yesterday. It lies somewhere between what we know and what we can imagine, between the limits of today and the possibilities of tomorrow. But this future has a hidden dimension, a mysterious secret area that we like to call the past. Telegrams truly changed the world. For the first time in history, people could communicate across vast distances at speed, messages delivered directly to their recipient's doorstep. The banging of your letterbox by a telegram messenger, carrying the official yellow envelope, could deliver huge joy or deep sorrow. News from afar of a birth, a marriage, or more sadly, a death. It was in England in 1635 that the first Royal Mail service was made available to the public by King Charles I, followed a couple of centuries later, in the mid-1800s, by the telegram. For a long time, most of the information going in and out of any household was only received through our doorways as telegrams and letters.
Then voices began to be heard, experienced in the home through a little box with twiddly knobs called a radio, and then transmitted out of the home via telephones, miraculously connecting two families across the world. And the magic didn't stop. The 1950s audio and visual outputs of the first television broadcasts totally enraptured families, who huddled together in their living rooms around yet another new box, this one with a curved screen for so-called immersive viewing of black and white images. This would feed into the home world scenes and dramatic news broadcasts, massively increasing access to knowledge within the family unit. These were dramatic shifts. The outside world started to exist within our own living rooms. One result of this was a radical and unprecedented restructuring of domestic space. Whereas radio didn't require a line of sight, television did, transforming the lounge into an open and flow-through room. Telephone extensions, second TVs, portable record players and tape machines meant that the traditional family unit started to fragment rapidly as members were able to pursue their separate interests apart from each other. Many of us see our home as our most intimate space, the place where we have our family meals and celebrations, hug our kids and fuss over our pets, where we try to keep good feelings flowing, the one place where we feel really safe. Today, that perception is hugely challenged as mass data flows in and out of the average home. With high-speed broadband, video conferencing, streaming, VR headsets, gaming consoles, internet-linked fridges, family locators and voice-led assistants, the amount of data is not only enormous, it is real-time. Today's household doesn't so much leak information as release great gushing floods of it, 24 hours a day, and it receives back huge amounts of data in return. Our domestic data flow rapidly increased again during the COVID-19 pandemic, when we couldn't leave our homes. We quickly adapted to the use of transmission and reception of data for our shopping and entertainment needs, and to telepresence through real-time video connections for our work, our healthcare, our schooling, and our socialising. Now, even in the same household, we are often separate. We are virtual and physical simultaneously. A big change in domestic life. A change which is influencing all of our household discussions, our deliberations and our decisions. So what are the new family rules needed to help us to exist positively and safely today? Sonia Livingston is a professor of social psychology at the London School of Economics in the UK. Her long-term work examines the opportunities and risks of digital and online technologies. Her focus is on children and young people at home and in school, looking at developments in digital literacies, media regulation, and children's rights. She has discovered that the shift in the power base of families has changed significantly, and that negotiation is key.
I think from parents' point of view, probably too much negotiation, but from children's point of view, a very welcome sense that their views count more than they used to. And technology, I suggest, has become the kind of space where families negotiate that. It's what parents and children argue about so much, but they're arguing about technology, who should use what, how long to use it for, what's appropriate, what's risky, what they can do together, what everyone wants to do separately. And the children's voices have become much more prominent, and children and parents now both expect a kind of democratic notion of family where everyone gets to say what they want and what they need, and then there's a long negotiation. All those negotiations are about technology, but they're also about what identity everyone has and what spaces and opportunities each individual wants. So they're very intense negotiations and sometimes very conflictual. But they are about something important, and they are about children having more opportunity to speak and represent their interests and be kind of in the vanguard of change within the family. On the question of digital literacy, it's one of the unique areas, actually, where children know things that adults may not know and that children can teach adults. And I've been trying to think of other things that children know that adults don't, and there aren't very many. So it is a really interesting moment in the life of families that parents can find, I hope, the humility to say, I don't know how that works, show me how it works, let me, you know, help me to understand. And children love having that opportunity. They really feel they've gained a kind of an expertise that they have learned is learning through doing. They explore and they discover more about this digital world, and they're delighted when they get the chance to share it with adults.
This power shift is hard for parents to accommodate, yet one of the positive outcomes is that the skills children will need in their future lives are, in part, being learnt at home. The ability to explain issues and suggest solutions and negotiate the best outcome for the whole family. But what about the huge and growing anxiety about the content their children are encountering online?
The moment we've just lived through and are living through about misinformation and disinformation, I think has made us all super aware that critical evaluation of content and of contacts is absolutely vital for young people. We've had a lively conversation in our society about the difficulty, but I think we still don't quite know how really to promote and support children's judgments, their critical judgments about the content that they're engaging with, and to ask all those questions that are so important in media literacy. I would love it if parents and schools were to teach children not only how to respond to content, but also how to create it, how to be creative with it, to think about the different design possibilities, the different genres they could engage with, the different aesthetics.
But what do parents really want for their children's futures?
They want their children to be healthy and happy and embedded in a meaningful life. So the question really is, will the technology advance those really basic human goals? We want technology to be seamless and easy and to enable so many of the things that it could with AI, and we could be more creative and expressive in interesting ways. And at the same time, we rail against technology being seamless and invisible and taken for granted, because we want to know when we're being sold to and when we're being nudged and what's happening with our data in this kind of seamless world. But if you talk to young people, they are very excited about what could come, and they are looking forward to a world of not so much virtual reality, but augmented reality, a more hybrid, maybe it is metaverse or multiverse. They're excited by what that could be and how it can help them overcome the very many barriers. There are lots of things stopping children doing what they want to do in our society, and technology allows them to leap forward in their imagination and to be with the people they want to be and overcome all the limitations that society puts on them. They see technologies as potentially very empowering, and they hope their future will bring more, but they're not daft, and they do understand that it's not always responsive to them. It's often controlling them in ways that they find difficult to understand and difficult to manage. And they are becoming quite cautious about the risks, the kind of safety risk, in a way that is, I didn't hear from young people 10 years ago.
So we need to encourage intergenerational exchange, a kind of new deal in the home between grandparents, parents and children. But with multiple technological devices in use within every household, we also need to ensure safety for the whole family and enable protection from digital intruders. Let's go to the safety zone to learn how.
The Safety Zone with David M., Principal Security Researcher at Kaspersky.
I think there are several aspects to this idea of household or family security. One of the key ones is to bear in mind that the more devices we have, the more things which are smart or which are connected in some way to the internet, the bigger the potential attack surface that we present to a potential attacker. You might have a home assistant, you might have multiple mobile devices, you've got several laptops as well as a desktop computer. Plus, you might also have appliances in the kitchen, for example, a TV connected to the internet. So there are so much more connections and therefore more potential for somebody to get into our home network and impact us. We still see manufacturers shipping routers which have got default passwords, so that everybody who buys that model, it's the same password and people don't necessarily change it. Really important to change that to something unique to you. When you're thinking about the security of your children, one of the things to bear in mind is that there is technology that can help you with this. So for example, Kaspersky does something called Safe Kids, which will let you frame the interaction of your children online. And you can find out what they're doing, what they're engaged with. The extent to which children can be vulnerable goes beyond just sharing the information. So an investigation we did as part of Tomorrow Unlocked Hacker Hunter video series, we found that pricking in children games such as Roblox involved stealing digital items, so as a pet griffin, for example. And clearly that can have an impact on children as well.
With so much of your life being digital, it's important to stay safe online. For more cybersecurity tips from Kaspersky, check the show notes.
Overnight in 1980, two huge screens appeared in public squares in New York and Los Angeles. In the morning, curious crowds had gathered around them and started to shout and wave to each other, amazed by the fact they could see, hear and speak with others 4,000 kilometers away. Hole in Space was a live interactive satellite sculpture created by two media artists, Kit Galloway and Sherry Rabinovich. This life-size video link was testing out whether people could effectively communicate with each other across the bandwidths. And it has become known as the mother of all video chats. Spontaneous outpourings took place. Dance and music performances, group charades, and songs burst forth between total strangers with exuberance. It's hard for us to comprehend now, but back then very few people had access to telepresence. Whereas today, our hybrid family lives constantly in real-time audio and video connectivity with others. There is one big issue, though. We feel the absence of intimacy. We have problems with trust building within these remote connection platforms. It's just not the same as being together physically. Intimacy relies on non-verbal signals, on eye contact and on touch, enabling us to bond, to build trust and communicate deeper feelings. In telepresence, we can't put our hand on someone's shoulder to comfort them. We can't lovingly stroke the cheek of our nearest and dearest. Touch is one of the most complex senses that exists. Emoticons are hugely dissatisfying, so overused they mean so little. Can online life ever enable those intimate embraces and kind gestures? Sly Spencer-Lee is a co-founder and co-CEO at Emerge in Los Angeles, USA, and is obsessed with enabling people to feel connected over distance and time through tangible and immersive experiences with a meaningful connection.
Emerge is a technology company that is building a solution for presence, ultimately leveraging audio, visual, and touch. Now, touch is one of these areas that we think is really misunderstood in the digital realm, and there is no de facto solution for the sense of touch digitally. So our device is a tabletop device about the size of a laptop, and it radiates outwards and emits this ultrasonic force field, completely safe to the body, to humans, and to animals. Through beamforming, we can actually create and sculpt sound at very high levels of precision that you can feel with your bare hands. So you do not need to wear any wearable to use our technology. All you really need to do is put the device on the table, and at the cue, you can reach out and use and feel spaces above and around the device. You can feel this literal force field. The sense of touch that our device can generate today is on the order of magnitude of a caress. So if you were to imagine both of us would reach out our hands in the digital world using our devices, and the moment our hands would touch, you would feel my hand and I would feel yours, and it would feel like a caress. Today, we're able to create a three-dimensional shape of a hand, actually. And the moment our fingers touch, you would feel that pressure. And it's very light. If you were to go too far, you could easily pass through each other's hand and it might feel odd. But it actually turns out that your mind will fill in the gaps and you will know when to stop. We felt that touch could communicate so much emotions that sometimes words just can't do. Sometimes visuals just cannot do. And so the key use case we've always wanted to build was that interpersonal one between two people or a group of very close friends or family members. In my case, it's my grandma. She lives in Mississippi. I live in LA. She has Parkinson's. And so whenever I visit her in person, we tend to like hold hands and sit and talk story. She has an Emerge device. And every now and then, we actually are able to hold hands virtually. And it's pretty amazing that even at her age, she's able to use this technology. I think it's because it's very low friction for a user. There's no wearable. You don't have to put anything on. And, you know, she cried the first time she tried it with me. Our product works optimally between 2 to 8 people. So we found this magic number of around 8 or less being the right number where you can have an intimate moment where you can really feel like you're bonding with someone, you're having a meaningful connection. And with the right audio, visual, touch cue, we can deliver a very fantastic and emotional experience.
Emerge is all about enabling people to start to create a new language for virtual touch, for communicating togetherness online. But what about our senses of taste and smell? And how does the touch scenario evolve for our future home lives?
I personally think that the other senses, taste and smell, will not come online in a physical form. in terms of some type of helmet that you wear that delivers smell or taste. We think it will become inevitable, probably through some brain-computer interface. The way we see the home evolving, the future of the home, parents and their children, and these different technologies, it's a really big problem, the fact that people are very disconnected when they're physically together. And how sad is that? But when people are physically together, they're not even together. They're not even present. And so we believe very deeply in ambient computing, where the technologies will stop being so in our face and will really start to fade away in the background in our environments. This is how our tech is evolving as well. We can embed it into various surfaces or other devices. And that way, you can summon various technologies or experiences or digital content when needed, but you don't replace or you don't put anything between you and the person sitting across the couch from you. The behaviors that we look to design our product to drive are actually in the category of rituals versus habits. When we think about our product, we actually think that there's a lot of beauty, the fact that it's not a wearable, so it's not constantly on you. It's sitting there on the table. You have to go to it. You actually need to coordinate a time to use it with somebody else. We have rituals around eating at a dinner table, playing a board game at a coffee table. So we exist there, and it adds a lot of value to someone that's using it at the time they want to use it, but it's not constantly in their face.
The evolution from the doorstep telegram to touch-linked telepresence in just over 150 years is the result of exponential growth in the sophistication of our technology. We're still discovering what this means for our existence as social human beings. The emergence of ambient technologies will create a more immersive scenario at home, with devices able to help us without prompting. Led by machine learning, our technologies will train themselves based on the patterns of our family lives. This will allow a more fluid and, in a way, a more humane feeling, supporting our families by knowing what it is that we need and when. Maybe the technological environment of our domestic scenarios could help stabilize our family lives. I am always touched by your presence, dear, sang the pop star Debbie Harry in 1978, reminding us of the significance of close presence in our lives. And for most of us, the opportunity to develop trust and experience intimate encounters across time and space will empower us to create meaningful connections in this new hybrid world. Across season two, we cover a range of fascinating topics, including the metaverse, women in gaming, the concept of extending our lives through digital health in extended self, our future digital twins, and the world of cyborgs and embedded technologies in cyborg shifts. We also celebrate the contributions of women in STEM and discuss the need for greater representation in the field. So make sure you are following us on your favourite podcast channel. You can also read more interviews and stories from Fast Forward Season 1 and 2 on tomorrowunlocked.com. We've added a link in the show notes. You have been listening to Fast Forward. This has been a Sounds Fancy production with music by Simon James and Max DeWardner. You also heard the voices of my special guests, Professor Sonia Livingston, Sly Spencer Lee, and David M. My name is Ghislaine Boddington, and I have been your writer and presenter.
Virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, extended reality. There are so many versions of reality these days, you might feel you're losing your grip on it.
You have your avatar with your camera feed on top of your head. You take a virtual world and you insert aspects of the real world into it.
But extended reality technologies are transforming everything from retail to science education.
Training veterinary scientists, what was developed was this virtual goosebump.
I'm Susie O'Neill, and in the next edition of Insight Story, Tech Trends Unlocked. Impact from Kaspersky, the cybersecurity experts, we'll be exploring how extended reality can transform your business.
The companies that are more willing to look into those changes will be the ones that are more successful down the line.
Find Insight Story, Tech Trends Unpacked for Business Leaders, wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get ahead, you can't afford to miss it.